Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
The crackle of my ancient radio cut through the stillness of the ranger station. I sighed, setting down my lukewarm coffee and reaching for the handset. Whispering Pines, Ranger Mike speaking.
Shh. Hey Mike, it's dispatch. We've got some hikers overdue at Clearwater Creek. Can you do a sweep?
I glanced at my watch. 8:47 p.m. So much for an early night. Copy that. I'll head out now. As I gathered my gear, I caught a glimpse of myself in the station's grimy mirror. At 35, I was starting to show the wear and tear of over a decade in the backcountry. A few more gray hairs on my beard, a few more lines around my eyes. But the job kept me fit, and I still moved with the easy grace of someone at home in the wilderness. I'd been the head ranger at Whispering Pines State Park for 3 years now. It was a step up from my old gig in Yellowstone, but a far cry from the bustling tourist spots I had worked before. This place was different, quieter, the kind of quiet that sometimes makes your skin crawl. Shrugging on my jacket, I headed out to my truck. The night air was crisp, carrying the earthly scent of pine and decaying leaves. Autumn was setting in, panting the forest in shades of gold and crimson. Beautiful, sure, but it also meant shorter days and longer, darker nights. As I navigated the winding park roads, my headlights cut through the thickening mist. It wasn't unusual for fog to roll in after sunset, but something about it tonight set me on edge. It seemed to cling to the trees, writhing and shifting in unnatural ways. I shook my head, banishing the thought. After so many nights alone in these woods, it was easy for the imagination to run wild. I cranked up the radio, letting an old country tune chase away the silence. 20 minutes later, I pulled into the Clearwater Creek trailhead. No other vehicles in the lot. Not a good sign. I grabbed my pack and flashlight and set off down the trail.
Hello?
I called out every few hundred yards.
Park ranger, anyone out here?
Only the whisper of the wind through the trees answered me. As I hiked deeper into the forest, the mist grew thicker, muffling my footsteps and reducing visibility for just a few yards ahead. An owl hooted mournfully in the distance. After about a mile, I came to a fork in the trail. To the right, the path continued on towards Clearwater Creek. To the left, I paused, shining my light down the overgrown left-hand trail. Old memories stirred, things I'd rather forget. That way led to the off-limits area, a section of forest that had been closed to the public for over 4 decades. Even us rangers avoided it when we could. There was too many dark stories, too much ugly history tied in those woods. 6 children had vanished there back in the summer of 82, when they were finally found months later. I swallowed hard, pushing the gruesome details from my mind. Focus on the job, Mike. As I turned back to the main trail, a flicker of movement caught my eye. There, just beyond the tree line. Was that a person?
Hey!
I called out, sweeping my flashlight towards the spot.
This is Park Ranger Mike Thompson. Do you need assistance?
For a moment, all was still. Then, faintly, I heard what sounded like a child's laughter drifting through the mist. My blood ran cold. It couldn't be. Not out here. Not at this hour.
Hello?
I tried again, fighting to keep my voice steady.
If someone's there, please respond.
Silence fell once more, heavy and oppressive. I stood frozen, straining my ears for any sound beyond the pounding of my own heart. Just as I had convinced myself it was nothing more than my imagination playing tricks, I heard it again, closer this time. A high, sweet giggle like wind chimes in the graveyard. Every instinct screamed at me to turn back, to radio for backup and get the hell out of there. But I couldn't shake the image of a lost child, alone and afraid in these woods. What kind of ranger, what kind of man would I be if I abandoned them? Taking a deep breath, I stepped off the main trail and into the undergrowth. The mist seemed to part before me, tendrils curling around my legs as I pushed deeper into the forest.
I'm here to help,
I called out, my voice sounding thin and reedy in the stillness.
Just stay where you are. I'll find you.
As I pressed on, the woods grew denser, the trees pressing in closer on all sides. The beam of my flashlight barely penetrated the gloom. An unnatural chill settled over me, seeping into my bones despite the warmth of exertion. I don't know how long I wandered through that maze of twisted trunks and grasping branches. Time seemed to lose all meaning in the suffocating dark. But eventually, I stumbled into a small clearing. My light fell upon a weathered wooden sign, its faded letters barely legible. Restricted area, do not enter. I froze, the realization hitting me like a physical blow. Somehow, I had ended up on the off-limits zone, the very heart of the forest's dark history. As the implications sank in, a twig snapped somewhere behind me. I whirled around, heart hammering in my chest. There, at the edge of the clearing, stood a small figure. A child, no more than 7 or 8 years old, wearing what looked like an old-fashioned dress, long hair obscuring the face.
Oh, thank God,
I breathed, relief flooding through me.
Are you all right? Are you lost?
The child remained motionless, silent.
It's okay,
I said softly, taking a cautious step forward.
I'm here to help. What's your name?
Slowly, so slowly, the child raised their head. As the beam of my flashlight illuminated their face, the blood froze in my veins. Her skin was a sickly gray, pulled tight over jutting bones. And her eyes were solid black, glittering like polished stones in the darkness. She smiled, revealing teeth filled with sharp points.
Wanna play with us?
She asked in a voice like rotting leaves. Before I could react, the earth beneath my feet began to writhe. I stumbled backwards, my legs tangling in the undergrowth. The flashlight slipped from my trembling fingers, its beams spinning crazily across the clearing before going dark. In the sudden blackness, I could hear something moving towards me.
No,
I gasped, scrambling to my feet. This isn't real. It can't be real. A cold small hand brushed against my arm. I jerked away with a strangled cry, nearly losing my balance again.
Why don't you want to play with us, Ranger Mike?
The girl's voice came from right beside me, a sickly sweet whisper that sent shivers down my spine.
We've been so lonely for so long.
I turned and ran, crashing blindly through the forest. Branches whipped at my face and tore at my clothes, but I barely felt them. All that mattered was getting away, putting as much distance as possible between myself and whatever that thing was. Behind me, I could hear giggling. Not just one voice now, but many. A chorus of children's laughter that seemed to come from everywhere at once. The sounds spurred on me, lending wings to my feet as I fled deeper into the forbidden zone. I don't know how long I ran, minutes or hours. It all blurred together in a nightmarish haze of fear and adrenaline. Eventually, my foot caught on an exposed root, and I fell down hard, the breath driven from my lungs as I hit the forest floor. For a long moment, I laid there gasping, every muscle screaming in protest. As my racing pulse began to slow, I realized I could no longer hear the laughter. The forest was silent once more, save for the ragged sound of my own breathing. Slowly, painfully, I rushed myself to my knees. My hands scrabbled in the leaf litter, searching for my dropped flashlight. Instead, my fingers closed around something small and hard. I squinted in the gloom, trying to make out what I had found. It was a tooth. A human molar, to be precise. Its roots stained dark with old blood. I recoiled, my stomach heaving. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I realized with growing horror that the ground around me was littered with bones. Some were obviously animal, but others? Others were terrifyingly human. "Oh, God," I whispered, fighting back the urge to vomit. "Oh, God, what is this place?" As if in answer, a cold wind gusted through the trees. The branches creaked and groaned, their shadows seeming to reach for me with grasping fingers. And carried on that wind, so faint I may have imagined it, came a child's voice.
"Come find us, Ranger Mike. Come play with us forever."
I scrambled to my feet, heart pounding. I had to get out of here, had to find my way back to civilization. But as I spun in a slow circle, I realized with sinking dread that I had no idea which way I had come from. The trees all looked the same in the darkness, an endless maze with no beginning and no end. Taking a deep breath, I forced myself to think. I had trained for situations like this. Stay calm, use your head, look for landmarks and any sign of the direction you came from. As I scanned the area, my eyes fell upon a dark shape looming in the distance. It was too regular to be natural, its edges too sharp and defined. Squinting, I could just make out what looked like a roof peak. A building out here? It didn't make any sense, but it was the only lead I had. Steeling myself, I set off towards the structure, moving as quietly as I could through the underbrush. As I drew closer, details began to emerge from the gloom. It was a cabin, old and weathered, its windows dark and empty. The porch sagged, half-rotted boards threatening to give way at the slightest touch. I hesitated at the edge of the small clearing surrounding the cabin. Every instinct screamed for me to turn back, to take my chances in the forest rather than approach this ominous structure. But exhaustion and desperation won out. Maybe there would be a map inside, or supplies I could use to signal for help. The porch steps creaked ominously as I climbed them, each footfall threatening to send me plummeting through the worn wood. The front door hung askew on rusted hinges. Taking a deep breath, I pushed it open. The interior was pitch black, the musty air thick with decades of dust and decay. I fumbled in my pocket for my phone, cursing under my breath as I realized the screen was cracked from my earlier fall. But it still worked, the dim light barely illuminating a few feet in front of me. I swept the phone's light across the cabin's single room. Overturned furniture laid scattered about, covered in cobwebs. Faded papers were strewn across the floor, their contents lost to time and rot. Something on the far wall caught my eye. Squinting, I could just make out what looked like photographs tacked to the peeling wallpaper. I picked my way carefully across the debris-strewn floor, drawn by a morbid curiosity I couldn't quite explain. As I drew closer, my breath caught in my throat. The photos were old, yellowed with age, but still clear enough to make out their subjects. Children, six of them, smiling at the camera with gap-toothed grins and innocent eyes. With trembling fingers, I plucked one of the photos from the wall. Scrawled on the back in faded ink was the name and date. Sarah Winters, July 12th, 1982. The missing children. These were pictures of the missing children, taken just days before they vanished. A floorboard creaked behind me. "Do you like our pictures, Ranger Mike?" I whirled around, heart leaping in my throat. There in the doorway stood the girl from the clearing, her black eyes gleaming in the dim light of my phone. But she wasn't alone. Five other children flanked her, each as pale and wrong as she was. "You shouldn't be here," the girl said, her voice a sing-song mockery of concern. "This is our special place, our forever home." I backed away, my shoulders hitting the wall. What are you?" The girl, Sarah, I realized with dawning horror, cocked her head to one side. "We're the lost ones, the forgotten ones, and now you're going to join us." As one, the children surged forward. I dove to the side, narrowly avoiding their grasping hands as I scrambled to the door. But as I reached the threshold, the rotting floorboards finally gave way beneath my feet. I fell, plunging into the darkness below. The last thing I heard before I hit the ground was the sound of children's laughter echoing all around me. I awoke to the taste of dirt and the throbbing ache of what felt like 1,000 bruises. For a moment, I laid still, struggling to piece together what had happened. The events of the night came rushing back in a flood of terrifying images: the ghostly children, the cabin, the fall. Groaning, I pushed myself to my knees, squinting in the dim light that filtered through the broken floorboards above. I appeared to be in some kind of rot cellar or basement, the earthen walls held together by rotting timbers. The air was thick with the scent of damp soil and decay.
"Hello?"
I called out, my voice hoarse.
"Is anyone there?"
Silence was my only answer. At least those things hadn't followed me down here. Small mercies, I suppose. I fumbled for my phone, praying that it had survived the fall. The screen flickered to life, revealing a spiderweb of cracks but still functioning. No signal, of course, but the flashlight still worked, casting a weak beam through the gloom. As I swept the light around the cellar, my blood ran cold. The walls were covered in crude drawings, childish stick figures scrawled in what looked disturbingly like dried blood. And there, propped in the corner, was a small skeleton, its bones bleached white with age. I scrambled backwards, my back hitting the earthen wall as bile rose in my throat. This was madness. It had to be some kind of hallucination. A bad trip brought on by toxic fungus spores or something. Things like this didn't really happen in the real world. A soft, scratching sound from above froze me in place. It was followed by a child's voice, muffled but unmistakable.
We know you're down there, Ranger Mike. You can't hide from us forever.
I had to get out of here. Fight down panic. I forced myself to think. There had to be a way out. Some kind of escape route. Cellars like these often had external entrances for bringing in supplies. Keeping my movements as quiet as possible, I began to search the perimeter of the room. The beam of my phone's flashlight danced over dirt floors and timber supports, revealing nothing but more unsettling drawings and scattered bones. Just as despair began to set in, my light fell upon a section of wall that looked different. The timber there was newer, less weathered than the rest. Heart pounding, I moved closer, running my hands over the rough wood. There, a seam, almost invisible unless you knew to look for it. I dug my fingers into the crack, pulling with all my strength. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, with a groan of protesting wood, a hidden door swung open. Beyond lay a narrow tunnel, its walls supported by timber frames like some kind of old mineshaft. A cold breeze wafted in the depths, carrying the promise of freedom. Without hesitation, I plunged into the passageway. The tunnel sloped gently upward, twisting and turning as it wound its way through the earth. I moved as quickly as I dared, one hand on the wall to steady myself, and the other holding my phone out like a lifeline. I don't know how long I walked. Time seemed to lose all meaning in that lightless burrow. But eventually, I saw a glimmer of natural light ahead. Hope surged through me as I quickened my pace. The tunnel opened into a small cavern, moonlight streaming in through the jagged opening in the rock face. I was out. I had made it. As I stumbled towards the exit, drunk on relief and the promise of safety, a sound stopped me in my tracks. Voices. Children's voices carried on the night wind.
Come back, Ranger Mike. Don't leave us all alone.
We just want to play. Don't you want to play with us?
Stay with us forever. We'll be such good friends.
I hesitated, glancing back into the darkness of the tunnel. For a moment, just a moment, I felt an irrational urge to go back, to return to those lost children and, what, join them? The thought sent a shudder through me. Shaking my head to clear it, I scrambled out of the cave and into the cool night air. The forest stretched out before me, bathed in pale moonlight. I had no idea where I was, but anywhere was better than that nightmare behind me. I set off at a brisk pace, picking a direction at random and praying it would lead me back to civilization. As I walked, I tried to make sense of what I had experienced. Ghost children? An underground labyrinth? It all seemed too fantastical to be real. And yet the ache in my muscles and the dirt under my fingernails told a different story. Whatever had happened back there, it wasn't just a dream or hallucination. Lost in thought, I almost missed the sound of running water up ahead. Hope flared in my chest. A stream could lead me back to more familiar parts of the park. I quickened my pace, pushing through a tangle of undergrowth. As I broke through the tree line, I froze in disbelief. There, not 20 yards away, was my truck, parked right where I had left it at the Clearwater Creek trailhead. For a long moment, I simply stared, unable to process what I was seeing. How was this possible? I had wandered for hours, fallen through the floor of a cabin, crawled through an underground tunnel. How could I have ended up right back where I had started? A twig snapped in the forest behind me. I whirled around, heart pounding, half expecting to see those ghostly children emerging from the shadows. But there was nothing there. Just trees and mist and moonlight. I turned back to my truck, fishing my keys from my pocket with trembling hands. As I reached for the door handle, something caught my eye. There, stuck under the windshield wiper, was a piece of paper. With a growing sense of dread, I plucked it free. It was a photograph, old and creased. Six children smiled up at me, their faces hauntingly familiar. And scrawled across the bottom in childish handwriting was the words, "Thanks for playing with us, Ranger Mike. Come back soon." I crumbled the photo in my fist, a scream of frustration and fear building in my throat. This couldn't be happening. It wasn't real. It couldn't be real. As if in answer, a chorus of distant laughter drifted from the forest. I threw myself into my truck, gunning the engine and peeling out of the parking lot in a spray of gravel. As the miles fell away behind me, I tried to convince myself that it had all been some kind of elaborate hoax or stress-induced breakdown. But deep down, I knew the truth. The children of Whispering Pines were real. They were out there, waiting in the darkness, and someday, somehow, they would find a way to make me join their endless, terrible game. I drove through the night, putting as much distance between myself and that cursed forest as I could. But no matter how far I went, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. That somewhere out there in the darkness, six pairs of coal black eyes were fixed on me, waiting patiently for my return. The weeks following my encounter in Whispering Pines passed in a haze of sleepless nights and paranoid days. I had taken an extended leave of absence from work, citing stress and health concerns. My superiors were understanding, if a bit confused by my sudden change in demeanor. I couldn't shake the memory of those ghostly children, their haunting laughter echoing in my dreams. The crumpled photograph laid hidden in my desk drawer, a constant reminder that what I experienced was all too real. It was during one of my late-night internet deep dives that I stumbled upon something that made my blood run cold. A news article from 1982, detailing the disappearance of six children from a summer camp near Whispering Pines. The names matched those I'd seen scrawled on the backs of the photos in that decrepit cabin. But it was the last paragraph that truly caught my attention. Local Ranger Michael Thompson Sr., who led the initial search efforts, was unavailable to comment. Sources closed the investigation report that Thompson was taking an indefinite leave of absence following the tragic outcome of the search. Michael Thompson Sr., my father. I sat back, mind reeling. Dad had never spoken much about his time as a ranger. He had left the job when I was just a kid, moving our family clear across the country with little explanation. Now, decades later, I had somehow found myself working in the very forest he fled. Was it mere coincidence? Or did some unseen force draw me back to Whispering Pines, a cosmic game of generational tag? With trembling hands, I reached for my phone. It had been years since I had called home, our relationship strained by time and unspoken tensions, but I needed answers. The phone rang once, twice, three times before a gruff voice answered.
"Hello?"
"Dad?" I said, my voice catching. "It's Mike. We need to talk about Whispering Pines." There was a long pause, filled only by the sound of my father's ragged breathing.
"How did you..."
He started, then stopped.
"No, no. We don't discuss that, ever."
"Dad, please," I pressed. "I was there. I saw things. The children. I need to understand what happened." Another pause, longer this time. When he spoke again, his voice was heavy with a wariness I had never heard before.
"You shouldn't have gone back there, son. That place, it's not natural. What happened to those kids?"
"Tell me," I urged. "Please, Dad, I need to know." He sighed deeply.
"All right, but not over the phone. If we're going to have this conversation, it needs to be face to face. Can you come home?"
I agreed, booking a flight for the following day. As I packed, my mind raced with questions. What did my father know about the disappearances? How were the ghostly children I had encountered connected to the tragedy from decades ago? The flight and subsequent drive to my childhood home passed in a blur. Before I knew it, I was standing on the front porch, staring at the weathered door of the house I had grown up in. My father answered on the second knock. He looked older than I remembered, his face lined with years of carried burden.
"Come in," he said gruffly, stepping aside.
We sat at the kitchen table, two mugs of coffee between us, neither quite sure how to begin. Finally, my father broke.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
A silence. What exactly did you see in those woods, son?
I told him everything. The eerie mist, the ghostly children, the cabin with its grisly secrets. As I spoke, I watched the color drain from my father's face. When I finished, he sat back, running a trembling hand through his thinning hair.
"Christ," he muttered. "It's happening again."
"What's happening again, Dad? What do you know about those children?" He met my eyes, his gaze haunted.
"It wasn't just a simple case of missing kids, Mike. There was something else out there, something that took them."
"What do you mean, something?" My father shook his head.
"I'm not sure how to describe it. A presence. A malevolence that seemed to seep from the very trees themselves. We searched for weeks, but it was like the forest itself was working against us, leading us in circles, hiding its secrets."
He paused, taking a shaky sip of his coffee.
"And then we started seeing them. Glimpses at first. A child darting between trees, laughter in the wind. We thought we were getting close to finding them."
"But you weren't," I said softly.
"No," he agreed. "We weren't. What we found instead..."
He trailed off, lost in a painful memory. "Dad," I pressed gently, "what did you find?" He looked at me, his eyes brimming with unshed tears.
"Bodies, Mike. Or what was left of them. Bound to the trees by roots and vines, like the forest had absorbed them somehow. And their faces..."
He shuddered.
"Their faces were frozen in these horrible, unnatural smiles."
I felt sick, remembering the sharp-toothed grin of the ghost girl I had encountered.
"After that," my father continued, "strange things started happening to the search party. Men would go missing for hours, only to return with no memory of where they had been. Others reported seeing impossible things. Trees that moved. Shadows that came alive.
Why didn't you ever tell me about this? I asked.
He sighed heavily. I wanted to protect you, son. I thought that if we left, if we never spoke of it, maybe it would all just fade away like a bad dream. But now?
He met my gaze, fear evident in his eyes.
Now I think I may have made a terrible mistake.
What do you mean?
Don't you see, Mike? It called you back. Whatever is in those woods, it's been waiting all these years, and now it's got its hooks in you, just like it did me.
A chill ran down my spine as the implications of his words sank in.
So what do we do now?
My father reached across the table, gripping my hand tightly.
We fight it, son. Together. It's time we put an end to whatever evil lies in Whispering Pines, once and for all.
As if in response to his declaration, a cold wind rattled the windows. And carried on that wind, so faint I may have imagined it, came the sound of children's laughter. My father and I pored over the old case files, newspaper clippings, and local legends, trying to piece together the mystery of Whispering Pines. We reached out to experts of folklore, paranormal investigators, and even a few spiritual leaders from various traditions. Slowly, a pattern began to emerge. The forest's dark history stretched back far beyond the 1982 disappearances. Every few decades, a tragedy would occur. Lost hikers, missing children, inexplicable accidents. Always in the same area, always with the same eerie details.
It's like the forest is hungry, my father mused one evening. Like it needs to feed on innocence and fear to sustain itself.
An old Native American legend caught our attention. It spoke of a spirit trap, a place where negative energy had accumulated over centuries, creating a vortex that attracted and consumed lost souls. The description matched Whispering Pines perfectly. Armed with this knowledge, we formulated a plan. It was risky, possibly even foolhardy, but it was the best chance we had to end this cycle of tragedy. On the summer solstice, when the boundary between worlds was said to be the thinnest, we returned to Whispering Pines. A small team accompanied us. A respected medium, a folklore expert, and a Native American shaman who claimed his ancestors had once sealed the forest's evil long ago. As we entered the woods, the air grew thick and oppressive. Mist swirled around our feet. The eerie whispers seemed to come from all directions. But we pressed on, making our way to the heart of the Forbidden Zone. We found the old cabin easily enough. It looked even more decrepit in the fading daylight, a tangible reminder of the horrors that had occurred here. The shaman began to prepare for the cleansing ritual, laying out sacred herbs and drawing intricate symbols in the dirt. That's when we heard it. The familiar, chilling sound of children's laughter. They emerged from the trees, just as I remembered them. Six pale figures with black eyes and sharp-toothed grins. But this time, I wasn't afraid. I understood that these weren't evil entities, but lost souls trapped in a cycle of pain and fear. It's okay, I said softly, stepping forward. We're here to help you, all of you. The ghostly children hesitated, confusion replaced with malice in their eyes. The medium stepped up beside me, her voice gentle but firm.
You don't have to stay here anymore, she told them. It's time to move on, to find peace.
For a moment, the forest itself seemed to hold its breath. Then, with a howl of rage that shook the trees, a dark presence made itself known. Shadows writhed and twisted, taking on a vaguely humanoid shape, the true evil that had been manipulating these lost souls for decades. The shaman began his chant, his voice rising above the chaotic noise. The medium and folklore expert joined in, their words weaving in tapestry of light and hope to combat the darkness.
My father and I stood our ground, facing the shadow creature.
You have no power here anymore, my father declared. We see you for what you are, and we are not afraid.
I felt a small hand slip into mine. Looking down, I saw one of the ghost children. Sarah, I recognized, gazing up at me with eyes that were no longer solid black, but filled with a very human fear and hope.
Help us, she whispered.
In that moment, I understood what we needed to do. My father and I began to speak, not with the rehearsed incantations, but the words that came from our hearts. We spoke of forgiveness for ourselves, for each other, and for the lost souls trapped here. We spoke of love, of hope, and the peace that awaited on the other side. One by one, the ghostly children began to change. The grayness faded from their skin, and their eyes regained their natural hue. They looked at us with wonder, as if seeing the world clearly for the first time in decades. The shadow creature thrashed and wailed, its form becoming less distinct as the cleansing ritual reached its peak. With a final earth-shaking roar, it dissolved into wisps of black smoke that dissipated into the wind. A profound silence fell over the forest. Then slowly, the ghost children began to glow with a soft, warm light. They smiled, not the terrifying grins of before, but genuine expressions of joy and gratitude.
Thank you, Sarah said, her voice no longer eerie, but filled with peace. We can rest now.
One by one, the children faded away, their souls finally set free to move on. As the last of them disappeared, I felt a great weight lift from my shoulders. The oppressive atmosphere of whispering pines had vanished, replaced by the natural sounds and scents of the healthy forest. My father pulled me into a tight embrace, tears streaming down both our faces.
It's over, he whispered. We did it, son.
In the days that followed, we worked with park authorities to properly memorialize the victims and educate the public about the area's history. The Forbidden Zone was opened up, its natural beauty no longer overshadowed by darkness. Whispering Pines became a place of healing and reflection. Families of the victims found closure, and the forest itself seemed to thrive, as if relieved of a long-carried burden. As for me, I returned to my job as a ranger with a renewed sense of purpose. My father and I rebuilt our relationship, bonded by our shared experience and the knowledge that together we had brought light to a place of darkness. Sometimes on quiet nights when the moon is full, I think I could hear the faint, joyful laughter of the children playing in the distance. But now, it brings a smile to my face rather than fear to my heart. For I know that the lost souls of Whispering Pines are lost no more, and the forest is finally, truly, at peace.